For What's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Pope Francis returning home after historic trips to Cuba and the U.S. The Pope is on his way back to the Vatican after ending his busy 10-day trip. He left Philadelphia Sunday night after celebrating Mass in front of hundreds of thousands of followers. In his homily, Francis spoke about family life, saying faith is lived out in the details. Earlier Sunday, the Pope met with bishops, calling for continued vigilance against clergy sexual abuse of youth and the efforts by superiors to conceal grave misdeeds. He also visited with about 100 inmates at a prison. Tensions over the conflict in Syria are expected to be high on the agenda today when President Obama and Russian leader Vladimir Putin hold their first face-to-face talks in about a year's time at UN headquarters. In an interview recorded in Moscow and broadcast Sunday, President Putin told CBS Network 60 Minutes that Russia intends to support its longtime ally, embattled Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. But he said Russia will not participate in any Syrian ground action against Islamic State extremists in Syria at this time. France says it launched its first airstrikes against Islamic State militants in Syria and targets it identified after 2 weeks of surveillance flights. French President François Hollande says that six jet fighters hit an IS training camp near the eastern Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor. Iraq says it will share military intelligence and security information with Syria, Iran, and Russia in order to fight Islamic State. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's spokesman said the intelligence group will focus on monitoring the movements of the terrorists and degrading their capacity. This is VOA News. Iran is demanding that Saudi Arabia apologize for the crush outside the holy city of Mecca that killed 769 people during the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Sunday the Saudis should accept the responsibility and apologize to the Muslims and the victims' families. Saudi-led helicopter airstrikes killed 25 civilians, mostly women and children, in a village in northwestern Yemen on Sunday. The attack occurred in Bani Zila in Yemen's Red Sea border area with Saudi Arabia. Israeli riot police briefly clashed with Palestinian protesters at Jerusalem's Flashpoint Al-Aqsa Mosque compound on Sunday. Police say young, masked Palestinians threw stones and fireworks at police and border police forces who responded with riot dispersal means. No injuries or arrests were reported following the altercations at the Hilltop compound in Jerusalem's Old City that is revered by Jews and Muslims. Authorities in eastern Afghanistan say hundreds of Islamic State militants staged a coordinated pre-dawn attack Sunday against key security outposts in a remote border region. Reports say 85 militants and three Afghan policemen were killed in the mountainous Achin district of Nangarhar province on the Pakistan border. In Sierra Leone, local health officials say the 42-day countdown to be declared Ebola-free has been launched for a second time, as the last two patients with the deadly virus were released Sunday from the hospital. Following the latest outbreak in the north, hundreds were confined to their homes in Bombali and nearby Kambia districts. President Obama has committed the United States to a new plan for eliminating global poverty and hunger. Speaking Sunday at the United Nations in New York, he told a global summit on sustainable development that the world has much more work to do.
Billions of our fellow human beings are at risk of dying from diseases that we know how to prevent. Many children are just one mosquito bite away from death. And that is a moral outrage. It is a profound injustice. It is literally a matter of life and death. And now, the world must act.
President Obama's remarks came at a gathering of world leaders on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. He'll be addressing that world body later today. Separatists in northeastern Spain's Catalonia region claimed victory Sunday in local parliamentary polls that could push the region toward a face-off with the central government over independence. And China's President Xi Jinping called on world leaders Sunday to boost efforts to improve women's rights. Speaking at a UN summit on gender equality, he pledged $10 million to the UN Agency for Women while drawing sharp criticism from activists and rights groups. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta calls for a global effort to defeat terrorism.
At the end of the day, we all must recognize that this threat of terrorism is not a threat to Kenya, it's a threat to the world, and we must continue to work together to defeat it.
Uganda's main opposition leader says he will contest next year's election against President Museveni unless there is a change in the decision of the opposition alliance. Congo-Brazzaville's ruling party says the people want a review of the constitution, not President Sassou Nguesso. And Sierra Leone begins yet another 42-day countdown to be declared Ebola-free.
We are very much cautiously optimistic that we'll graduate into the 42 days without any relapse, but we are intensifying that we must not compromise the medical measures that will contain Ebola for its eventual eradication.
Abdoulaye Berete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government Spokesman. New platforms help Kenyan farmers access credit easily, and Pope Francis urges immigrants to cling to their faith. The stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says the threat of terrorism is a global phenomenon and the world must unite to defeat it. On the conflict in South Sudan, Mr. Kenyatta says the key focus should be on the implementation of the recently signed peace agreement so that attention can be given to the formation of a national governmental unity and the reintegration of combatants. President Uhuru Kenyatta spoke in this exclusive interview with viewers Esther Gitui Uwot on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York.
The threat of terrorism, again, is a threat not just to Kenya, it's a global threat. And we are working with our international partners in close collaboration to see how we can handle that particular threat, how we can handle the issue of extremism. And we are working closely with the United States government. They have been great support to us in many fields. And I think we have gone a long way towards ensuring that Kenyans and Kenyans are safe. But at the end of the day, we all must recognize that this threat of terrorism is not a threat to Kenya, it is a threat to the world, and we must continue to work together to ensure that we are able to defeat it.
Mr. President, looking at the regional issues, you've been involved in these mediation efforts in South Sudan, and unfortunately, what we see is that President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have not really been able to agree to move the country forward. What do you see as the next step to resolving the political stalemate and the crisis in South Sudan?
I think we have made progress. We have gotten both parties now to sign the peace agreement. We have gotten both sides to see the need for peace. We are continuing to engage with them actively on the sidelines of the General Assembly. We are having a session to discuss South Sudan. So I think really what is important right now is for all of us to work together with all parties, not just the two groups, but with, you know, civil society organizations, the church organizations and communities, to implement this particular peace agreement. And I think that's really where our key focus now should be, both as a region, but also with the international community on board, so that we can begin to open up humanitarian corridors in South Sudan, so that we can begin to get the government of national unity that has been agreed to be established, so that we can get security havens, or what you call safe havens, where, or demilitarized areas, so that the combatants, how do we begin to integrate the military units? I think the key focus now is actually on implementation.
Mr. President, His Holiness is here in the United States now, but he will be coming to Kenya in November. The significance of this?
I think it's a very significant moment for Kenya. Kenyans are excited about that particular mission, and I think the word of peace, the word of inclusivity that he is sending across the world, the need for religious tolerance, I think is a critical message at a particular stage in time that we are in. He is sending messages that I think are very pertinent to Kenya today and indeed to the globe.
That was Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking in an exclusive interview with viewers Esther Githui Ewart on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, says he and his Forum for Democratic Change party, the FDC, are making preparations to go it alone into next year's presidential election unless there is a change in the position of the Democratic Alliance. This comes after the alliance, a loose coalition of opposition parties, chose former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi as its candidate to challenge President Yoweri Museveni in the 2016 election. Mal Norbert, a supporter of Mr. Mbabazi's candidacy, told VOA last week the alliance could not reach a consensus because Dr. Besigye had not conceded. But Dr. Besigye says his party had concerns about the position of Mr. Mbabazi on many issues.
On our part, as Forum for Democratic Change, we had three reservations regarding the candidature of the Honorable Amama Mbabazi. The first was that, indeed, having been in government for 30 years, we did not think that he had demonstrable commitment to the central tenets that we in the opposition have been driving to make sure that we have change in governance. Secondly, the Honorable Amama Mbabazi still stands alone where we see him. He has not created any kind of a structure framework within which he is functioning. We do not know who ARS is working with. We have been interrogating that question to know the framework within which he functions and how, therefore, he accounts for whatever he does to any other organization, to an organization or a system of or structure of other political actors, and that has remained a sticking issue. And thirdly, has been the question of commitment again, or where he places the need for the electoral and political reforms.
Dr. Besigye, you were recently chosen by your party, the Forum for Democratic Change, for the 2016 election. Now, what happens now? Is the party going to contest alone, or are you still negotiating within the Democratic Alliance?
Well, the negotiations with the Democratic Alliance regarding the presidential elections has closed, and we are preparing to go ahead with the campaigns. Of course, new situations could arise in politics, you never say never. And if there is a new rethinking within the opposition, we remain open-minded.
Does it make it difficult now to defeat President Museveni? Or do you still think the opposition at this time has a chance to defeat the president in 2016?
You see, Mr. Museveni has never won an election. He has always stolen the elections. It's not the popular support that is a problem in this country, popular support for the opposition, not at all. And that is why the question of focus on electoral reforms is critical, because Mr. Museveni has a comprehensive control of the electoral management system, and that makes it that much difficult for any candidate, whether it's one candidate, even if we have succeeded in getting a joint candidate, that candidate would still face the immense obstacles that lie on the path of an election. So we have a huge problem. It's not just a question of an ordinary election, and that is why my own campaign will be focusing on empowering citizens to reclaim their power, to defy the regime. Unless really we get some fundamental political and electoral reforms, our country remains on a very slippery ground.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. An official of Congo-Brazzaville's ruling party says the people want constitutional review, not President Denis Sassou Nguesso. This comes as thousands of people staged a mass demonstration in the capital, Brazzaville, on Sunday to protest plans by Mr. Nguesso to try to extend his rule. The rally was the biggest since Sassou Nguesso returned to power in 1997. Serge Michel Ozoku is a spokesman for the ruling Congolese Labour Party. He says the demonstrations are part of democracy in Congo Brazzaville as long as the opposition does not turn violent.
You know, here in Congo Brazzaville, everybody who is in politics they always say that this constitution is not good now, for now, and we have to change. So our position in this, our party, we say that we can't do it now. And the main opposition, they say that it's not for now because they want to wait for President Denis Sassou Nguesso and his mandate in 2016, next year. And we tell it's not possible. We can't do it now. So we went in CBT for national dialogue. And after, President said that if the political cannot understand each other, we have to go to a referendum to ask the opinion of population. So we are now waiting for the date of this referendum. It's not for President Denis Sassou Nguesso to be for a long time in the presidency. This is not the matter of now. It will be matter of presidential election in next year.
Mr. Ozoki, what do you want to tell the thousands of Congo-Brazzaville citizens who demonstrated on Sunday? They went in the streets to say they don't want a third term for President Nguesso. What do you want to tell them?
You know, we are in democracy. They went this Sunday for meeting. It's good for democracy. And I think, will also do meeting here in Brazzaville and anywhere in Congo. The main problem is we have to do it in peace, no troubles, in security of population. Because in peace, we can do anything, many things, peace. And if we go with troubles like the last years here in Congo, it will be bad for Congo. And we have to discuss, because in democracy, everyone can tell what he wants. In the end, population will have to decide. I think I have to tell to our friends who are in opposition to make democracy, no troubles in Congo, not to disturb peace between population.
Sir Michel Ozoki, a spokesman for the ruling Congolese Labour Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Brazzaville. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. The time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. A civilian official says the government is cautiously optimistic that the country will successfully complete a new 42-day countdown to be declared Ebola-free without any setback. This came after the country began a new 42-day countdown Saturday after discharging its last two new patients from the International Medical Corps Treatment Center in Cambia District. Abdullahi Berete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government Spokesman.
Absolutely. We discharged the last two patients from our treatment facility, that is the International Medical Corps Treatment Center in Cambia District, on Saturday. And since that day, we have accumulated Saturday and Sunday that we are now 2 days into the 42-day countdown so that we'll be declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. And we are very hopeful that since the entire country, we don't have any chain of transmission cases, apart from the 780 people that are in quarantine in Robuya Village in Bombali District. So far, all our case indexes are confined there with nobody showing any symptoms for Ebola at all.
So, Mr. Berete, help us to understand what happened to those people that had been quarantined, say, for example, in Bombale District, in neighboring Cambia. I think the last time we spoke was about around 700 or 1,000 people. What happened? Are those people still quarantined?
They are still quarantined as per WHO protocols and as well as the National Ebola Response Center measures. That since the incubation period for the disease itself is usually 21 days, so these people have now appreciated over 10 days into their quarantine period. And so far, we are very lucky. Nobody has shown any symptoms of the virus at all. But once they reach their 21 days, the quarantine period will be over.
As you said again, the patients were released on Saturday, and the countdown began. But you did not make an issue of it. You did not put out a big news release about it. Were you concerned that perhaps you might experience something that happened back in August when some big celebration was made and then you found out that new Ebola patients came about?
Well, the one in August was very symbolic, the reason being Ebola ravaged this country to a very, very horrendous situation. That was why since May 2014, when we had the fourth case index, it therefore became symbolic that when the last patient who contracted the virus had to be discharged, the president himself went at Matene village along the Matene-Matonkolili highway to do that symbolic thing and also to drum home the point that we still have Ebola. And that is why when these two were discharged again at the IMT treatment center in Cambia district on Saturday, we went on the air to remind the public that in as much as these two patients have been discharged and that Sierra Leone has started the 42-day countdown for us to be declared Ebola free.
Abdoulaye Berete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government Spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Crowdfunding is on the rise among Kenyan farmers, many of whom don't have the credit history or collateral to get loans from banks. Two Kenyan innovators have developed an online platform that allows farmers to directly access funds from investors. Another platform is accessible by mobile phone. Lenny Ruvaga examines how these platforms work and what impact these new sources of funding are having on farmers' lives.
Mary Musioki intently inspects her harvest of French beans. She and her husband David run a 10-acre farm mainly for exporting. Until recently, she ran just a 2-acre farm. They were able to increase their acreage with a loan from a crowdfunding site. Musioki says it's the only way they could access affordable credit.
We would not be here if we were dealing with a bank.
Banks in Kenya generally offer loans with interest rates anywhere from 16 to 25%, too high for most Kenyan farmers. So Farm Capital Africa decided to offer a platform for farmers to secure credit at reduced rates. Once a farmer applies for credit, the company charges about 2% on the total amount borrowed at the end of a financial year.
A farmer can look into Farm Capital Africa and get a loan that is unsecured in terms of collateral and interest rates. And we also give them extra support in terms of extension services.
Crowdfunding in Kenya is slowly gaining ground. Mchanga, which means contribute in Swahili, has been in operation for 3 years now and has about 40,000 customers. It helps farmers or entrepreneurs raise money through mobile phones. David Mark, a co-founder of the company, says crowdfunding can be a real lifeline for farmers when disaster hits.
Having a different resource, which is your social network, it can be from across the country or across the world. And this is not to replace formal credit, it's to support it and contribute to it.
Experts are quick to point out that crowdsourcing, if it expands, could pose a challenge to traditional banks.
The entry of crowdsourcing, I think, for banks is going to be a challenge because I think banks will see them as a frenemy, a possible friend if it allows them to extend in a collaborative manner, but possibly an enemy because, you know, they too will be targeting the bank's customers.
As for the Musiokis, they attribute their bumper harvest to this newfound line of credit. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Standing at the birthplace of the United States, Pope Francis urged the country's immigrants, especially the largely Catholic Hispanic population, to overcome the hardships of integration while clinging to their faith. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski was there and has this report.
It was the moment they had been waiting for. Francis blessed the youngest of them and even accepted a gift. Then standing at Abraham Lincoln's old lectern, the Pope gave what was essentially a pro-immigration pep talk in Spanish.
No se desanime.
Do not be discouraged by whatever challenges and hardships you face.
He told them never to be ashamed of their traditions, noting the many Hispanics in the crowd.
Pienso en particular en la vibrante fe.
I think in particular of the vibrant faith which so many of you possess, the deep sense of family life, and all those other values which you have inherited.
This is the key speech of Francis's 2 days in Philadelphia, and his message is clearly falling on willing ears in this historic setting.
All he says is almost what I also think, so it's very close to my heart.
Cerquísima. No lo puedo creer. Cerquísima.
I came so close to him, I can't believe it. I didn't take any picture, but I showed him this photo of my family.
And no one seemed to mind this anti-immigrant protester who bashed Francis for not speaking in English and criticizing capitalism.
He's one of the world leaders pushing the United States of America towards socialism.
Hispanic Americans make up a third of the U.S. Catholic Church at a time when it's losing adherents who are the offspring of earlier waves of immigration. Jerome Sokolowski, VOA News, Philadelphia.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenyans Eliud Kipchoge and Gladys Cherono triumphed at the BMW Berlin Marathon in the German capital on Sunday. Kipchoge won the men's race in a personal best and world's quickest time this year of 2 hours 4 minutes. He shaves off 5 seconds from his previous marathon lifetime best, while Cherono carried the day in the women's race in 2 hours 19 minutes and 25 seconds, thereby improving her lifetime best by 38 seconds. In football, Tunisian hosts Etoile du Sahel went on the rampage thrashing Egypt's Zamalek 5-1 in the opening leg of their Orange Africa Confederations Cup semi-final in Sousse on Sunday. South African hosts Orlando Pirates pipped Egyptian defending champions El Ahly by a solitary goal in Soweto in the other semi-final on Saturday. Elsewhere, Algeria's USM Algiers upset Sudanese hosts El Hilal 2-1 in the opening leg of their Orange Africa Champions League semi-final in Khartoum on Sunday, while Sudanese hosts El Merreikh edged the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe 2-1 in the other semi-final in Omdurman on Saturday. Meanwhile, FIFA's image plummeted to an all-time low when FIFA President Sepp Blatter was interrogated on corruption charges by the Switzerland Attorney General's office at the FIFA headquarters in Zurich, Switzerland on Friday. The Swiss Attorney General's office revealed that they have opened criminal proceedings against Blatter, suspecting criminal misappropriation of millions of dollars in 2 cases. The first is a contract Blatter signed with former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner for a television contract with the Caribbean Football Union in 2005. The second is Blatter paying European Football Chief UEFA President Michel Platini over $2 million in 2011. Blatter's predicament comes barely a week after FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valcke was suspended following allegations of inappropriate conduct related to the 2014 FIFA World Cup ticket sales. With the fall from grace by Blatter and Valks, FIFA's image is in tatters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you will make this week a very productive one.
Next on Let's Talk, punctuality. Does it matter to you? Does it affect your views about someone when you meet to do business? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing punctuality. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll come to you live from New York, where world leaders are gathering for the United Nations General Assembly. They will address a variety of global concerns, including the European migrants crisis, climate change, and this year's UNGA theme, the UN at 70, A New Commitment to Action, Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa.